Okay, welcome back to another episode of the Streetwise English Podcast. I'm your host, Carl. We're here on the way to Mount Hood in just outside of Portland, Oregon. And I'm here with two world-class musicians, originally from southern India, Flute Raman, and his brother from the same mother, Shri Khan, who plays the violin. So we have two top performing Carnatic music experts, and they are brothers. And I just saw them in a concert yesterday, and we're going to have a few words with them about their experience playing music all over the world and sharing their culture. So let's get started. Mr. Flute Raman, welcome. Hello.
Thank you.
So Flute Raman, can you give us a big picture and tell us what you're doing here in Portland this visit?
Yeah, Portland, one of the Indian organizations presented us. So we were doing a Carnatic, pure traditional South Indian concert. It's like a flute. Flute is the main instrument. And I was accompanied on the violin with by Mysore Srikanth, who is my brother, and on the South Indian drum. It's called the Mridangam. It is a double-headed drum, which is one of the oldest percussion instruments. And it is also known as a king of all the percussive instruments. So it's called as the Mridangam. And we did a concert yesterday, it was great.
Can you tell us the difference between the South Indian Carnatic flute and the Bansuri bamboo flute that people are more familiar with in the West?
The Southern South Indian flute is one of the oldest wind instrument. It's believed that Lord Krishna lived like 5,000 years back, and Krishna used to play the flute. So that's what you see in a lot of the sculptures, paintings, and the South Indian flute instrument is a very, very old instrument. And the North Indian Bansuri is a very recent addition, probably 150 years, 160 years. Pannalal Ghosh, brought the Bansuri. The Bansuri is a very one octave. It is like a violin and a cello. The flute is a medium octave, but the Bansuri is an octave lower than the flute. So, and then the fingering is also different. The Carnatic traditional flute, the fingering is different for the Bansuri. It has an 8-hole. The South Indian flute has 8 holes. And the North Indian Hindustani Bansuri has only 6 holes. So, that's why I play both. And I feel that you can do a lot more on the Carnatic flute than on the Bansuri. You can play everything what you can play on a Bansuri, and you can do a little more on the South Indian flute. And also it has an older history. So,
okay, I have another question for you. I saw you on stage and you didn't just have one flute. You had a whole stack of flutes. Can you tell us why you had so many flutes on stage when you performed?
Yeah. So the thing is, my teacher is Dr. N. Ramani, and his teacher is one of the world's greatest flute players who lived in the Carnatic music scene. His name is T.R. Mahalingam. So when Mali sir used to play, he used to play in one flute, just G scale. He used to take one flute and he used to do the entire concert. That's how the concerts were happening back then, you know. And then my guru started playing this Jugalbandis with Hariprasad Chaurasia. And when he saw the low flute, then he just loved it and wanted to introduce that in Carnatic solo concerts. So he used to play only two shrutis, like two kind of fingerings. But now, the thing is, I used to play for a lot of movie recordings. And when you have to play for movie recordings, you pretty much have to transpose your fingering to anything and play in a lot of different scales. And I think that gave me the strength to do this. So now I can play a rag. You know, a raga is a melody. And a melody can be, it is like changing, when a photographer changes these lenses like you do, you know, you have 5 or 10 different kind of lenses for different purposes. So a raga is like a mountain, you can think. So you can view a mountain from different angles, right? The mountain is the same, but you can, when you change the angles, you see the different angles of the mountain. Like that, I want to express my the raga through different flutes, through different lenses. So when I pick up and when I do a cross fingering or when I transpose my fingering, the exploration of the raga is very, very different. So it's like adding a big lens for a, you know, I can see the raga through a big lens and minute details I can see. And also I can cover the entire range. I can play 5 octaves. Honestly, on a single flute, you can play only 2.5 octaves. But I can pretty much double that. So I can play a raga lapana from a very low. So it's like one instrument where you can play double bass, cello, violin, and also, you know, it's like covering the entire range. And that is a recent addition. And, you know, but it was first introduced by my teacher. So that's how it goes.
You just mentioned that you've performed music for music. You just mentioned that you've played music, composed music for TV and films in India. Can you tell us how many dialects and languages there are in India? I know that music plays a big part of communication because it bridges the gap between the different cultures in India itself.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's a joke sometime back, a few years back, I was doing a tour with a santur player. The santur player is from north, and you know, I don't know Hindi and all that well. So we used to talk in English, and then one was saying, oh, you say you both are from India, but you speak in English. So the India has so many languages. Oh my God, it is crazy. It's really crazy. And normal Indian people, at least they speak 4 languages minimum. And some of them, they speak 6 to 8 languages. My mother can speak 6 languages. And I can speak Tamil, Kannada, Telugu, you know, all the most of the South Indian languages, little bit of Malayalam and little bit of North Indian Hindi and English. So 6-7 languages I'm comfortable. Mostly because it demands, because when you are a musician and when you are traveling from city to city, state to state, you pick up all these languages. So And the beauty of it is every language has their traditional music. And so if you go to Malayalam, there are some specific songs which are very popular, very traditional. And as a musician, if you want to play for an audience, say I'm doing a concert in Kerala or Trivandrum, I want to pick up songs which is very popular in that region. And if I'm playing in Karnataka, I want to play more of Purandaradasa, all that Kannada songs. So as a South Indian musician, it's such an advantage that you pick up all these languages, because you'll also learn songs from all these languages. And also when you want to learn the songs, you want to know the meaning of the songs, right? And then so that gives an impetus to learn more languages, because you want to understand the songs. Without understanding a song's meaning, you know, it is, you cannot express the song. So if you want to express a song better, then I want to learn Telugu, and I want to see what the composer is trying to say that. If I'm playing a song in Sanskrit, I want to understand what the song is demanding, what is it saying, and there will be a lot of intricacies in the song, there will be a lot of episodes, stories. So you learn a lot of culture, you learn a lot of all this history, and you know, all this... there will be a lot of snippets from epics of Ramayana in a song. So you learn all that by learning music.
So can you tell us a story or lesson or part of history that is expressed in the music in a traditional South Indian raga? Or anything like
that? Yeah, there are lots of songs. One very popular song called Nagumomu. It's my dad's favorite song. That's why I love the song. I learned that because I wanted to please my dad. So in that, the composer Thyagaraja Swami, he says, he talks about an elephant, you know, you came to rescue an elephant, but why is it so hard for you to come and rescue me like that? So he talks about an elephant. There's an episode where it comes in all these Puranas and, you know, epics. So when you learn the song, I didn't know about the episode. Then I asked, hey, what is this saying? And, you know, then, you know, I asked my mom, and then my mom told the story. Oh, then it's very easy to connect that story. And then when I am playing the song, I also remember the story and how God rescued. So in that story, just to give you a small, God comes to your rescue when you completely surrender. That's the moral of that whole story. Because first you want to tackle your problems on your own, and you try to do it, and when you cannot, then that's when you completely surrender to the God. So when you're when you completely surrender, we call that as Sharanagati. Like when you are completely surrender yourself to the God, then, you know, then God rescues, comes to your rescue. That's what happens in that story. And yeah, the elephant is a very pious elephant. I'll tell you the story. It's a very interesting. And a lot of Indian kids who are my students, they don't know the story. When I teach this song, I tell them the story and they really love it. So there is an elephant, supposed to be a very pious elephant, daily comes to a river, picks a lotus flower and prays to the God, and takes that flower, puts it on the on God's statue. And this has been her routine. Then the elephant is called Gajendra. The name of the elephant is called Gajendra. So the story is called Gajendra Moksha. So he does this every day, and one day the crocodile comes and catches hold of the elephant's leg. Elephant tries, even in Indians dance, if you see one of the some of the Indian dance, Bharatanatyam, they do this in the dance thing, in some of the songs. So the elephant tries to escape, tries to struggle, fight, and finally it gives up and it prays to the God Mahavishnu, and Vishnu comes to his rescue and, you know, kills the crocodile and saves this elephant and gives salvation to him. So that episode is called Gajendra Moksha. And see, lot of these episodes will come in songs.
So the dance, you said, like people lift their feet up like they're
being... Yeah, they do that. Yeah. Like a crocodile coming, they will show the crocodile catching the elephant and the elephant struggling to move, and all that they show. And people who know these stories, most of the Indian older folks, they know this story. Oh, they are doing this. Oh, they are showing Krishna stealing butter. Like, these stories are all very popular stories. So that's the advantage of being a musician. You learn history, you learn languages and all that.
Okay, one last question here. I know that you're on this project of 1,000 ragas and 1,000 locations for your YouTube. Can you tell us a little bit about this project?
Yeah, flute, the instrument which I play, a flute, the Indian flute, it's such a simple instrument. And there are stories where Krishna used to play outside, you know, in the mountains. And he's called a cowherd. He used to play the music for the cows, and to graze them, he used to play the flute. So one of my friends, when I visited Grand Canyon, asked me to bring the flute. He said, hey, bring your flute and why don't we do some small video. And I did couple ragas there, and it's such a pleasure to play outside, especially in the canyon, and the sound travels like crazy. And I posted some videos of which we shot there, and that went viral. People loved it, and then they said, hey, can you do this raga? And then the best part of being a touring musician is I get to tour a lot. I have traveled all the 48 states in the US. Other than Alaska and Hawaii, I've been to every other state. So I performed. Then I just thought, why don't I record? Like I'm in Portland now. So yesterday I did a concert. My good friend Murliji is taking me to Mountford, which is great. So I'm going to record a few ragas there. So like that, I started this project almost 10 years back. And also, there are the ragas are all... they deal with emotions and time and places. So there are some ragas which go very well with the mountains. There are some ragas which go well with the water. There are some ragas for rain. There's a raga called, which I played yesterday, a raga called Amritavarshini. That's mostly connected with the rain. Even in Hindustani music, there's a raga called Miyaki Malar. That is all seasonal. They do the raga during that monsoon season. So ragas are there for times and all that. So I thought this playing out in the nature and picking a raga which suits that atmosphere and at that time, that's a very interesting project. And also, there are thousands of ragas and a musician doesn't know. We have compositions which we learn, and there are only 50-60 popular ragas which we always perform. But I wanted to learn all these ragas, and this project gave me this, to record new ragas. And I've recorded 760 ragas at great locations of the world so far. 760 so far. And probably, I want to do a Guinness record on this. So nobody have done anything like this. So I'm inspired to do this. You know, regardless of the Guinness record or anything, it gives me a lot of happiness, and a lot of fans follow this also. Oh, they say, can you do some raga when you come here? When you come to Oklahoma, can you do something in Utah? I've not done in Bryce Canyon. I want to do that. So somebody asked me, hey, can you go to Bryce Canyon and do some ragas like that? So if I go to Bryce Canyon, probably I'll choose some dry ragas, you know, the dry weather there with all that. And ragas are also associated with a lot of colors. So, you know, I pick and choose. Sometimes I study, and this gives me, and a lot of my musicians' friends have appreciated this. And a lot of Western musicians have tried new scales watching my videos. So all this really inspires me to do more.
Okay, one last question. For your students that are listening to this interview, do you have any advice for them if they feel like they're stuck and plateaued on this between beginner and intermediate level, and they want to push through and go to a more advanced level? Do you have any general recommendations or advice for them to increase their level of playing?
See, what happens is you have to be your self-judge always. The best tip which I give for all the students is record yourself and watch that. Then, you know, you see yourself better. It is like taking your picture and analyzing. So when you record yourself, you see your mistakes bigger than what you thought. So that is one tip which I give for them to grow. And the most important tip given to me from the one of the great flute players, Hariprasad Chaurasia, is, you know, you see what you can do better with your instrument and don't copy anybody. And how can I make it better? How can I make it better constantly? I want to play a raga better than what I played yesterday. So little bit better incrementally. I want to make it little more nicer. What can I do to make it nicer? So constantly, you know, you work on your instrument. And I always look for like latest gears. How can I make my sound better? What can I do? So I use a lot of processors and stuff like that, which the purists won't approve. They think I'm processing it and all that. But I don't care. But as long as I love what I do, if I like, then the audience are going to love it. If I don't like what I do, you know, like the famous quote of Steve Jobs, you have to, in order to do great work, you have to love what you do. So I just want to enjoy the music I play for myself. When I do that, it's automatically going to appeal to the audience. So the students, if they have to improve from where they are, if they are stuck in that intermediate level, they want to see. And of course, there are always great motivators, great players from whom they can learn, right? In whatever instrument they are doing, there are many geniuses they have already done. And what are they doing differently? What is that? Why is that a person's playing is so attractive than mine? What is that difference? See, I always tell students, it's not impossible. If you do the same fingering what I do, if you do the same blowing I do, then if you play, it's going to sound exactly like what I'm going to play, right? It is not rocket science. Even rocket science, Elon Musk has learned himself by studying and doing things. So it's not tough to learn. If you watch great masters, you can easily pick up stuff from there and learn. So that's why.
Listen to the masters, practice how many times a week?
Oh, practice always, as much as you can. I don't practice as much as my brother. My brother practices like 8-10 hours a day sometimes. So that requires a lot of tremendous determination and also a very, very minimalist lifestyle. His lifestyle is a very, very minimalist lifestyle. His needs are pretty much very, very simple, so that he devotes all his time, puts everything what he has onto music. I wish I can do that soon sometime.
And to close here, can you tell the audience where people can find more information about you? I know your students already know, but just for the general public, where can people listen to your music and learn more about your teaching and your cultural programs?
Yeah. All of our albums are available on iTunes and all those digital medias like, Amazon, CD Baby, all that digital platforms. They search Flute Raman and R-A-M-A-N, F-L-U-T-E-R-A-M-A-N. They can see my YouTube. They can see all these CDs and all that on iTunes and everything. Instagram, of course. And same with Mysore Shrikant. He keeps a very low profile. He doesn't have all those outlets. But, with my CDs, he has played in a lot of my CDs and stuff. So... yeah, Flute, and also from my website, ramankalyan.com, ramankalyan.com. You can find a lot of my music, and of course, YouTube.
Thank you guys so much for listening. That was a pleasure talking with you, Flute Raman.
Thank you so much, Carl. It's always such a pleasure, and I think this is the second or third interview I've done for you. Thank you so much. Bye.